and welcome to the Wheel Talk podcast. My name is Abby Mickey. I'm here with my two lovely friends to talk about women's professional road cycling. Gracie Elvin.
Hey, hey. Number one.
And Lauren Rodney.
My partner said I need to stop talking about the fantasy team, but I think I'm still number one.
Oh. No, you're the most important number one.
Yeah,
you wasted no time bringing that up.
I know. 1 second. So I will. That's the last time I'll talk about it.
That's
on the
a
podcast, because he has been listening to it now, which has been amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Thank you, Honest.
Yeah. We've got another femme, which is really cool.
Well, we're here to talk about Paris-Roubaix Femme because Lauren and Matt recorded a phenomenal podcast on the ground. If you missed that, it came out on Saturday after the race and it was amazing. And we're going to dive into a little bit of behind the scenes about them recording the podcast on the ground. But we had to gather as a group to talk about the race more specifically, tactics during the race and stuff that we picked up from the broadcast. So we're going to dive into all of that. Maybe we'll do a little bit of AMSOIL Gold previewing because that's coming up in just a couple days. Plus, we could talk about Brabant's appeal because it was phenomenal and that happened this week as well. But we'll start with Paris-Roubaix Femme. A phenomenal race, a dry edition. We thought it was maybe the cobbles would be wet or there'd be some puddles on the side of the road, but for the most part, it was completely dry because the day was pretty warm. And it ended up being a sprint to the line with a select group of riders. Little Trek had the numbers with Ellen Van Dijk and Elisa Balsamo, but Balsamo's legs weren't entirely there, which we will get into. It was won by Lotta Kopecky, the world champion, phenomenally. And I don't want to say loser, that's such a bad word, but the big miss of the day was Marianne Vos, who finished fourth with Pfeiffer Giorgi taking the last step of the podium. So a lot happened, a lot to dive into. I feel like we should start with Lotta Kopecky and SC Works because a lot was said after the Tour of Flanders about how SC Works Pro Time was maybe falling apart a little bit, how possibly the reign of SC Works Pro Time was coming to an end, which may be a little too early because hot damn, they were incredible on Saturday. And it wasn't just Kopecky. Like, there were other riders from the team that were amazing. Wiebes was in the second group on the road, so she was a great fallback if the groups had come together, and they were pretty close together. So it wasn't a given that the group of five up the road was going to win the race. And they also had great teamwork from Elena Cecchini and Christine Mayerus was there. She didn't have a great day, but she was up there in the beginning of the race. So there was a lot of SC Works all over this race. And in the end, Kopecky winning, she just was the best rider on the day. She was super strong in that final sprint. And I don't know if one sprint means that her sprint is back, but damn. We can definitely break down the sprint, but SC Works as a whole, what do you guys think? What are your takeaways?
I don't know, Gracie, you commentated the race, but what I find hard sometimes, I had to go back and watch the race and it took me a couple of days to get through it just because of, you know, childcare. But the hard thing is, I think it started at 83 kilometers to go. Is that right? We got coverage on and there was a whole 60 kilometers before that happened, and it wasn't till I was chatting on the ground in the velodrome to people, not riders actually, but just, you know, motorbike riders, Iris Slappendale was with Eurosport on the bike and such, that I've started to hear the stories of some of the riders that had a good spring, but it was like I didn't notice them in the race at all and they weren't there. And that is just simply, like we said, Mayerus, I think she put on Instagram, she had the worst legs she's had the whole year, which is really, really sad to hear because she's had a great spring. And it would have been awesome to see her there at the pointy end because I think, I mean, Kopecky won, but to have her there in the mix might have changed things again a little bit. Consoni had an awful day out. And off mic, we were just saying how with Paris-Roubaix, it's very much one of those races like gravel racing where if you get popped off the back or if something happens, it's virtually impossible to come back. But I eat my words because we need to talk about Pfeiffer Giorgi and how she came back and then managed to get on the podium. Because I think that was she was the ride of the day for me almost, her and Ellen Van Dyke. But yeah, with the coverage, it was, yes, it's hard because the focus is mainly on that front group. So when you have those splits happening, you don't often get to really see what's happening in group two or three as much. So it's a bit harder for me to actually to talk about SDWorks ProTime because I only really noticed Weebers and Kopecky on the day.
Yeah, it's the same. I'm surprised that they haven't reached the full coverage by now, which is frustrating. And I commentated the men's race for 5.5 hours plus before and after extras. So you're like, it's kind of frustrating that the women don't get flag to flag. And like you said, Lauren, I think we would have seen a lot more happening from other riders. So, I think SDWorks would have done a really great team job, but we really only saw half of them doing it because by that stage, yeah, there were a third of or more the way through the race. So that's just what happens. And I'm sure we would have seen more of other teams as well. So it's a shame for lots of riders who are doing a good job and they just don't get that coverage or, you know, that I'm sure that there was early breakaways trying to be forced. There was a couple of crashes that I saw on Twitter that would have been interesting to see how that played out and who was affected and how they had to chase back. And just, you know, the finish of the race, the power of that story is only as strong as the context around it. So it's like, you know, of course we have a good storyline with Kopecky and those top riders, but you know, you want all of the war stories as much as you can. And also, yeah, the war stories that go into those wins from teammates and even those heroes themselves. So it's a shame, but I'll stop my rant about that now. Yeah, it was impressive to see Kopecky have that mental turnaround, as we mentioned in the podcast last week, just wondering if that peak had kind of ended for her and how you manage that. But I think mentally she would have had to, you know, work pretty hard for that week leading up into Roubaix. But, you know, physically you've got to also manage yourself. And she looks so good physically. So it's a credit to her that she was managing the form and then, yeah, also mentally making good decisions. She would have had a lot of pressure on herself, probably pressure externally as well. And then I'm sure we can talk about the tactics of that last 10 or 20K a bit deeper, but, you know, having Weebers behind was, in my mind, her strength in a way, but I also think that she didn't really care. I think she was just in the box seat because she knew that those other four riders really wanted to work and she actually didn't have to work as much. And so Vos had to like almost ride the opposite to what she did in Flanders. And then they had the strength of those other riders there too. And Kopecky was kind of like, well, I don't have to drive this. And if you're going to bully me, I'm going to say it's Weebers. But in my mind, it doesn't really matter because I want to win.
Yeah, just
after the race, during her post-race interview, she highlighted like how in between Flanders and Roubaix, the team, her teammates and her friends outside of racing, like made sure to make her laugh and take her mind off of everything. And I wrote about this in the newsletter this week about how teamwork doesn't only happen in the race. It's not all about the lead out. It's not all about like getting bottles and making sure someone is in a good position. And we've talked about this so much on the podcast before about how like having strong friendships within your team helps the team succeed. And I think that this is a perfect example of why, because she said after the race that like there was a lot of pressure on her, a lot of it self-inflicted, and her teammates made sure that she wasn't leaning into that pressure and negatively feeding off of that energy. And it was cool to see a little bit of insight into the team in that like one statement from her, because I think when we look at SDWorks ProTime, we don't look at it the same as we would like Little Trek, a team that we know has a ton of fun together. SDWorks ProTime is kind of this overarching like black cloud a little bit sometimes, just because of the way that they dominate the racing. And I think maybe they also, with a little bit of the drama that we saw last year with Demi and Kopecky, like it's a different dynamic, that team, than any other team. But I think we did see from her interview a little bit more depth to the team in terms of like how they would have approached the race with Capecchi being on the start line and how much she wanted to win this race and after the failure of Flanders as well, which was, yeah, I found that really cool, kind of that she even thought to throw them in there in her post-race interview and say that. Added a lot to the storyline of her win and the turnaround from Flanders as well.
She just, the whole day, was just so cool, calm, and collected. I mean, she had a few little mishaps, like, but just didn't seem stressed out at all. She went back to the car. I think she fixed her handlebars herself on the bike, made her way back.
So cool. Oh my God.
Yeah. Like, you know, at some point she was hovering on one of the sectors near towards the back, but she just knew she was on it that day. And having spoken to some riders, like, I'm sure you've had this before, both of you, when you're on it and you just know, like, this is your day today. And you just feel great. I think Capecchi was definitely on one of those days because she just looked like she was breathing through her nose. And she was, even when she wasn't where she needed to be, she put herself back by herself. And I think that was what we're talking about last week, how a lot of teams usually move up through the peloton together and how SDWorks kind of just find their way by themselves and then collect where they need to be. But yeah, without the support of multiple riders, only Weavers, she was just doing it on her own.
Yeah, you guys mentioned a little bit ago the crashes earlier in the race. One of the riders that was impacted by those crashes was Allison Jackson, last year's winner. Crossed the finish line, took off her crown, gave it a good pat. She had blood running down her leg, like she hit the ground earlier in the day. And there was one moment when she attacked and the first rider to jump on her was Weebus. And it was the kind of like Weebus looked really strong as well and was just not in that group when it went, the group that ended up winning the race. But I do think having Weavis behind, it opened up more for Capecchi, because in that group, like, so we had in the leading group that won the race, we had originally Ellen Van Dijk up the road with Amber Crack, who had a phenomenal race. And then the chasing group behind, we had Capecchi, Voss, and Balsamo. Balsamo looked like she flatted on one of the last cobble sectors. Turns out like it was just her legs that flatted. They don't have spare sets of those in the car, unfortunately for her, but she got super lucky.
Or on the neutral car.
We will talk about that.
Legs.
Yeah.
I wonder what symbol you put up. What hand signal for like, fresh
two legs. I need two legs. This is an audio medium. Anyway, she got really lucky, Balsamo, because Pfeiffer Georgie had just had a run-in with one of her teammates and was off the back when that move went. And so Pfeiffer was chasing, and so Balsamo was just able to tack on. And it was that group of people, when they all came together, that made up the final sprint. Capecchi was in the best position because Balsamo had a teammate, and also we already knew that her legs weren't all there. Voss was by herself, arguably the favorite going into the race, because I think, yeah, after Flanders, people thought Capecchi might not have it. So Voss was doing more work. Voss was also more isolated pretty much the whole day than anyone else in that group, just with a little bit of lack of support. Like, she had some teammates up there, but it wasn't, she didn't have an Ellen Van Dijk. She didn't have like a Barbara Gerishin. No, that's not the right person who I'm thinking of. Raquel
Barbieri?
Rochelle Barbieri. Cannot speak today. Like the other riders in that group had stronger teams comparatively to Voss, and so she'd done more work throughout the day than them. And Capecchi, no matter how much she wanted it, she still did work in that group, a little bit of chasing. Like, she rolled through. It's not like she sat on the back the whole time. But coming into the velodrome, should we break down the sprint a little bit? Because I'm so curious in this sprint about, there's so much to talk about. We have to talk about Little Trek and how they missed that one move early on and how Ellen pulled it back. and Ellen in general. We just always have to talk about Ellen. We have to talk about DSM. But I want to talk about the sprint because it was, you'd think watching it as they started sprinting, as they were in the velodrome, like a little bit before the sprint really kicked off, that Kopecky was going to lose. She was not in great position. There was only five riders, but there was riders she had to move around in order to get to Voss and Balsamo. Voss like really kicked off that sprint, but it wasn't necessarily too early. So how did Kopecky win? How did Kopecky win in this sprint? I mean, she had the best kick for sure at the end of the day. And she came around the outside, so she had a little bit of extra speed, but it was, mm-hmm. but how did Voss,
it was longer
yeah,
line.
How did Voss it was, lose it?
Yeah, like
really,
Gracie said. Well, I think she just ran out of steam, to be honest. Like, you'd have to go back and like look at it time and time again, but I've watched the sprint a few times now, and it's like how I was commentating, it looked like it was Voss, it was Balsamo. And then after a bait, you don't really expect someone to kick like Kopecky, who came all the way around the outside out of the saddle, which is a huge effort after riding those cobbles all day. Because if you notice, Balsamo actually sprints in the saddle. I think Pfeiffer Georgie was sprinting the saddle and then got out of the saddle to actually get over the top of Voss in the end. And I didn't realize until 10, 15 minutes later that Georgie had got third. But with Kopecky, she was just a firecracker. I don't know. She found that extra gear, as we'll say, to do it. I don't know if there's much more than that, because like Gracie said, she came from the longer line. Like actually Voss and Balsamo were in the perfect position. They were doing a drag race to the finish. And then Georgie, it kind of opened up once Kopecky came around, and then Georgie managed to sort of get a second wind and go over the top of Voss.
I think if this result had happened a year or two ago, we would have been like, oh, that's normal, because Voss isn't at her best at the moment. And I think we've forgotten that she's only just coming back to her best again after a couple of years of some, you know, injury and stuff. So I think we've easily gotten used to her being good again. And I think we expected a lot from her, and she looked really good, and she was making good decisions, and she has had a good spring. But, you know, there's not even a percent in it. It's just like, there's nothing in it at that top level. And Kopecky is just so good that she got away with not being in the best position on the track. So, yeah, like, of course, she's got good track experience, and she knew when she needed to go, but she certainly didn't make the best decisions coming into the velodrome and on that lap, and still got away with it. And that just tells us how good she really is. But also, not to take away from the others, they're all really good as well. And Voss,
four of the five were trackies, I think. No,
yeah,
Balsamo, Voss, Kopecky, and Pfeiffer Georgie, they all have track background.
Does Voss have track experience?
Yeah.
She's a world champion and a Olympic gold medalist on the track. She got a gold medal at the Beijing Olympics.
Oh, that was before my time.
Yeah, people forget that. But yeah, so they all have this track experience. That's why it was like going to be this thrilling finish as well. I mean, we had all the people we actually predicted to be there were there, which, I mean, doesn't often happen in a race like Paris-Roubaix due to bad luck and such things, but... yeah, Gracie's spot on there. I think she just had that extra little bit on the day, Kopecky, and sadly Voss, yeah, missing the podium.
Lauren, you said before that this is going to be the race that eludes SD Works.
Mm-hmm.
I fear that this will be the race that eludes Voss.
Oh,
I fear. I have a fear. I really hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I want her to win this race so badly. Like it will write the universe. But I have this fear, because if this race had been around 5 years ago, 6 years ago, she would have won it already.
Yeah.
Like even that long, like if it had been around 10 years ago, absolutely. But like, even if it had like five more years on it, like, yeah, we would have seen her win this race. But at this point in her career, where she is and where the peloton is, I don't know, maybe. I hope I eat my words next year. I really hope. But it's a possibility.
I think the reason is because Voss is, as sad as it is to say it out loud, she is coming towards the end of her career. Maybe three years, 4 years. Annemiek went till 40, 41. I mean, Voss still has, I mean, she's still brilliant, so she can keep doing it for years and years. But I guess there will be that point. So for her, it's like you're saying, it's not like with these young riders like Backstead, who had a phenomenal ride for a 19-year-old. I mean, she was there in the second group till 4 kilometres to go. Incredible. She can actually walk away from that race going, I still have 10, 15, 20 years if I want it. If this is the race that I want to win, like this is my goal for my career, you have that, you know, that long timeline ahead. Whereas with Voss, she's probably very aware that every year that goes by, it will get increasingly harder to win it. And then, you know, time will run out eventually.
She's 36 now. I think based on how much she loves racing her bike and the fact that she's coming back this year after last year and the iliac artery endofibrosis, that we could safely assume that it's 3 more years for Voss. So she's got,
if she still loves it, in theory,
she's got 3 more. Everything could change. Like, you never know. And if she retires next year, she retires as the GOAT. Like, that title is hers for the foreseeable future. But yeah, maybe three more chances at Roubaix. And hopefully the next time she lines up for Roubaix, she has, I mean, just the amount of the difference that it would have made to have like Anna Henderson on the line, because it's not like their team isn't strong. They have some really strong riders on the team, but it's a very, very young team. And when it comes to Paris-Roubaix Femme, you need experienced riders backing you, and like Balsamo had that in Ellen Van Dijk, and that completely changed the race for Little Trek. Like, she was the MVP of the race, no questions asked. And the reason,
there was a moment though, I'm sure you all had this, right? Like, you, when Balsamo was dropped and I thought she'd punctured, and then I thought, all right, what do you do if you're Van Dijk now, when you look at the company that you're in? Okay, she can try and put in, she'd been putting in attacks all day, you know, closing gaps, doing a ton of work all day, but you wait for Balsamo, don't you? That's what you do in that moment, when Balsamo is just off the back. Or do you think, I'm just curious what was going in her radio, because at one point I think Balsamo was on Georgie's wheel and Georgie was dragging her back, but the gap wasn't coming down enough. It wasn't until Balsamo maybe got the go-ahead on the radio, you need to work now to get back to Van Dijk. Did you notice that? Then the gap really came down with, I think, 11 kilometers to go. They finally tagged on once Balsamo started working. But at one point, Van Dijk even attacked the group while Balsamo was still chasing to come back up. So I'm guessing at that point, there was maybe no DS in the radio going, this is the gap, this is where Balsamo is, we think she's still good for the finish, wait for her.
Yeah, I do remember that moment of being like, oh, I wonder what Van Dijk's doing now. Like, is she racing for herself now? Yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting moment. I mean, I think in that situation, even if Balsamo had a moment of flat legs, she still has more of a chance of winning in a sprint than Van Dijk does of getting away and winning solo. Van Dijk's never going to win in a sprint. She said herself after the race that post-pregnancy, she's still working on that kick. But if we're completely honest and we look at her as a rider, even before the baby, she's never had a kick. She's had a kick to be able to get away when she attacks, but she's not going to win against Voss and Capecchi in a sprint. So regardless of how Balsamo was feeling in that moment when she was dropped by that group, and maybe she thought she had a flat, like, and so she kind of let up a little bit. We don't know what happened to Balsamo at that moment. And to my knowledge, nothing has been said by the team after I've seen all of her interviews and heard her, like press release from the team, and they've not mentioned it. So not entirely sure like what happened at that moment. If it was that she just cracked a little bit, but she's still, if it was her legs, we've talked Gracie has talked recently about how sprinters, when they smell the finish line, they have an extra match always. And so if Balsamo was even just 13 seconds behind, 20 seconds behind, and close enough that she could get back, then the team is always going to say, like, it's the whole plan will be Balsamo in the finish versus Ellen. Unless there was like one more gravel sector, one more chance that Ellen could try to get away. But, and honestly, like, I did think for a moment that this was going to be Ellen Van Dijk's race when she was off the front with Amber Crack. I was like, 50% of Paris-Roubaix will be won by mothers if Ellen Van Dijk wins this race. And how that freaking would've been cool would that cool. be? Like, that would be unreal. But yeah, if Balsamo is that close, like, the team will be saying to Ellen, sit on, we need Balsamo to be up here. And they had the numbers up there with two anyway, like, if they can get Balsamo back. So I think that no matter what situation is playing out on the road, if the
Balsamo got super lucky that Pfeiffer Georgie got into trouble and was chasing back.
That was like a you couldn't write this moment.
No, because, like, you know how you said there was that like little bit of a lull, and Hannes turned to me and he said, is she given up or she punctured or what's going on? It looks like the fight's gone out of her. And then Georgie comes past just like on a mission to get back, because she was like, this race is not getting away from me. I've had a great day. I've been there every time it split. And she dragged her back. Like, without Georgie, Balsamo never would have gotten back. She would have gone back to that second group and like Weavers. So for me, again, I think Georgie and Van Dijk were just the two riders of the day, but just not giving up. I think I was listening actually to another podcast about Roubaix, and they were just saying how in this race, like Flanders, you just got to keep fighting and fighting and try to come back as much as you can. And Georgie just did not give up. So to see her get on the podium was just like the nicest thing. I was so happy. And her post-race interview was just the best. And when they zoomed in on her, when she found out she got third, I got so emotional, like rewatching it. I was just like, oh, yeah, it would have been such an incredible feeling. And she had a great day. And I'm just so happy for that rider. She just seems like a joy.
That when she found out that she won, that was like the most like feels heartfelt moment. I mean, I rewatched the race a couple days ago and we were watching it and I was like, the race was over. Everyone was like on their phones kind of as the coverage kept going. And I was like, no, everybody watch. This is like one of the best moments of the whole post race is when she finds out that she was on the podium. And I love how happy she was to get third, because it's in bike racing, so often it's like you get second and you're disappointed. Like we saw that from Wiebes a couple times this year from Charlotte Cool this year, getting second to Wiebes, and how disappointed she was on the podium, which is totally fair. She has a ton of pressure on her from the team. She's a sprinter. She wants to win. Like, we have feelings. That's fine. But like to have her get third in this race and be so excited and so emotional and happy was just it was like a really refreshing moment, I feel like, from a... Like, it's, you can't take anything too seriously, you know? And so it was just awesome. Also, great for my fantasy team. I got third and fourth. It's not winning the race, but it's still,
still fine. Still strong. Yeah. Strong.
I can take a little bit of a moment. Yeah.
And she's only 23.
Yeah.
So young. So much good career coming up, hopefully.
Yep.
But yeah, like such, so happy for her. She's had a great spring. So I think that was such a nice reward.
Who else?
If we're talking about MVPs, I want to go back to Ellen Van Dijk really quick, because there was that moment that we had a breakaway that was like, okay, this is it. The race is done. When it was Capecchi, Christina Schweinberger, who's another really strong up and comer, Voss, and Pfeiffer.
And Georgie.
And the big miss in that group in that moment was Little Trek, and Ellen Van Dijk was like, if if there was any question about her coming back from having a baby 6 months postpartum, which is insane, like my mind can't actually comprehend. There was no hesitation that she just jumped on the front right away and pulled them back. And that was, if Ellen Van Dyke hadn't been in the Peloton, those four would have ridden to the finish. But it wasn't only the strength that she had to bring them back. It was also the speed at which she reacted to that move going and jumped on the front, because they were off the front with enough of a gap for it to be like, uh-oh. But she was so quick in her response and brought them back on Mont-Saint-Pinvel, I'm pretty sure. The second five-star gravel sector, within like 400 meters of that gravel sector starting, she'd brought them back. And she just kept drilling it on the front over that gravel sector to keep the speed up. But it was, if she hadn't earned MVP of the day in the finale, keeping that group up the road with the chance that Balsamo had at a win, then mm-hmm. it was that moment that got her MVP for me, because she saved Little Trek's race in a split second with the decision to just go to the front. And
yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think her race smarts and courage were most notable, because we all know she's got the strength. It's still very impressive that she's in the shape she's in at the moment. But number one, impressive that she lined up in the first place for a very risky race as a time trialist going into the Olympics. And for someone that historically doesn't super love the risky races anyway. So not only was, she was definitely spending a lot of time on the front, which is safe, but she was also making good decisions and being a really great teammate. So yeah, in my mind, everything you said, Abby, spot on. And just the fact that, yeah, she was a really reliable teammate, not just, she wasn't just using her watts for nothing.
I cannot believe she's 6 months postpartum. That is just...
I had a really nice chat with her. I was walking back to my car, and she was just hovering outside the team bus. And I haven't seen Ellen actually in a few years, so it was really good to go and catch up and talk about kids and stuff like that. And she was just talking about her little boy, and the same thing actually that Lizzie Deignan, we've heard her say before, that even if she had a bad day, at least she gets to go home to him, and it's given her a completely new perspective on just racing and everything. I think we're starting to see that a bit. She's definitely super relaxed at the moment, and she's got big goals this year. And as long as she stays healthy and well, I can honestly say that she's going to achieve those goals. Her next race will be, I think she said, is she doing Amstel and Liège? So she's going to be a key part of Trek's team for those races there. And I think SD Works Pro Time are really missing Rusa at the moment.
FDJ had a really good day overall as a team, except for, unfortunately, their star, Grace Brown, so devo for her, just a bit too much bad luck. But, very gracious anyway. But the rest of her teammates looked great. Like,
gracious,
they were,
get it.
No, I didn't mean to. the rest of her teammates were really present for a long time in the race. And then Amber Crack, had a fantastic day. So it was a real shame that Grace wasn't there to back her up, but still a credit to the team overall. I think that they race well.
As my husband would put it, Amber gave it a crack.
Love that.
That's a good name.
They've been great all spring. Like, really, without... a few of their key riders there at the moment. They've been racing really well as a team, super active. I had that down. Like, I think for every race, I've just written a note. FDJ, Suez are the most active team, always putting themselves in the race. Maybe don't have that rider at the moment that you could, say is going to be the favorite to win. But it's coming. Their time is coming, I think, and that's it. This is all just practice for the races ahead.
I mean, they don't have Cecily Utrip-Ludwig, who would have been one of their star riders for a couple of these races, like Flanders, for example, and especially going into the Ardennes. she's still out after crashing at Omloopet Nieuwsblad. So it's, she's left a gap in their team, but they've really built up over the last couple of years, and like adding Los Arahis into the mix, and now Amber Crack last year, adding her is making the team a lot more versatile, because years past they've, you know, gone into the classic season with a stage racing team. And I think this year we've seen a turning point in that team, not only with, you know, the new riders that they've signed, but also with riders that they've had on the team. Like Jade Wheel gave it a crack. Gosh, damn it. Now that pun is stuck in my head. And she was off the front for a little bit as well. Like she had a great attack as a French woman in the race. It must have been an incredible feeling. But she's been on the team for a really long time, won the French national championships a while ago, and she definitely, you know, was getting up in the mix a little bit too. So it's not just their new riders. I feel like their new riders are also kind of reviving the riders that have been on the team for a long time as well.
Yeah.
We mentioned Grace Brown having some bad luck. Lauren, pre-recording, you were talking about how speaking with Iris, who got to see, you know, the back of the race, a view that not many people get to see except the DSs, and that there were some riders that had some bad luck. And one of those was Chiara Consoni, who definitely came into the race like she's been on pretty good form this spring, and maybe came into the race as like a 1-star favorite. There's a chance if there is a reduced bunch kick that she's going to be up there. I think Roubaix is a bit different in terms of the way that the race is going to play out, in any way that a sprint is going to play out, even if it's a bigger group than the one we saw. But Chiara Consoni is definitely one of those riders that has every year just made another step upward. And I think this year she's still, you know, working her way up the ranks, but she had one hell of a day.
A really, really bad day from what Iris was saying. And I think as well, as you saw probably on the TV, only I think SDOX Pro Time was the one team car who could really get up towards the front of the group. So that's the other thing, right, with Roubaix, is that the team cars, depending where you are, get blocked. And so you're just getting neutral service, and it can take a really long time at times to get help. And she just had bad luck after bad luck. And I'm sure there are a few riders that had a similar story on the day, but we just haven't heard those stories. I felt also pretty awful for Romy Kasper. She was there up in the mix still, and then crashed into one of the little, it's not a canal, is it? It's
irrigation. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. And at the finish line, I saw her and she was just in tears, because again, another rider who is always very present at the front of the race.
She did really well in this race last year.
Yeah, yeah.
She was the only one that didn't crash in that second main group of favorites. Remember, they all went down in skittles.
So a lot of feelings from her. Again, another rider, I think, who's coming to the last few years of her career and has been a great mentor on her team. So that was always hard to see the emotions. But there were also a lot of smiles at the finish line, because – there's a beautiful interview from, I think there's that new pro cycling, women's pro cycling, the guys who used to do the UCI stuff. They interviewed Marta Luck, who had a great race last year, and she was there today. She was there present in the second group this year as well. So she just said to finish the race was an achievement in itself, and that everyone was a hero.
I mean, there was so many teams that Roland, not a single rider, finished the race. For Movistar, they only had two finishers. And I mean, interestingly, actually, UAE team ADQ, they only started with four. They started two down from the beginning. They were already two short. And then, yeah, one of their riders didn't finish. There was a bunch of teams that had really hard days. I think maybe the most notable is Movistar, which kind of wraps up maybe a bit. Like Roland not having a single rider finish is maybe something we would be slightly less surprised by, because it's a team that is batting above its weight being in the World Tour. And they still have some strong riders on there, but it's not as surprising as Movistar, who, you know, I feel like going into the race, Emma Norsgaard would have been one of my favorites for a good result. And unfortunately she was sick. So that's a huge bummer, but like also it would be a knee click. This is like a race where a Domestique can shine and maybe walk away with a result if they're in the right place at the right time. So it's, yeah, I feel bummed for Movistar. And I hope coming into the races to come, like Leona Lippert, I hope that she's going to kind of salvage their spring a little bit with the Ardennes coming up, because especially with the climbing classics and especially like Flèche Wallonne, this is a great race for her. So we'll see what happens with them going into these races coming up, but definitely not the way that they would have wanted to end the Cobble Classics.
I think that's a good segue actually to the last part of the spring, huh?
Well, is there anything we missed about Paris-Roubaix? Other than just saying that you and Matt's podcast was so good. Like you guys absolutely killed it. It was amazing.
Yeah, I loved it.
So good.
Thank you. It was fun. Afterwards I was like, I don't know if that was any good. It was fun to do. Because I was just running on so much adrenaline, I think, being there, like, amongst it. I went to watch the race last year, which was super special, but this was the first time I got to be, like, in the center of the velodrome while the race is, like, coming in around you, and it just, like, gives you goosebumps. I think I mentioned, like, that it just wasn't a race that was around when I was racing. I definitely tapped out too early to even consider this being a thing. So, yeah, it's really special. And I look forward to actually going back every year and perhaps being on course at some point. That would be fun. Like, I really want to be amongst it on the cobble sectors just to get a feel of what it's like to see them come by.
Well, moms are killing it in the peloton. So should we make a comeback?
Speaking of comebacks, we'll talk about that at the end of the episode.
No, I loved it. I loved your calling of the last lap. It was like it was like half commentary, half passionate fan.
Yeah.
And I was grinning listening to it. It was joyful. And then I also really loved the interviews of non-bike riders. So yeah, really, of course we were all like super fans of Iris and loved listening to her. And Kate Verano is amazing. Hopefully we can hear more from her. And even, yeah, Christophe Ramon, that was really interesting just to hear other people's experience of the day. I think that's really also super fascinating. And lastly, Abby, I'm sure most of the listeners have already listened to this, but for any riders listening, especially that haven't, the interview with Alison Jackson was so good. So many good takeaways. And some things I didn't realize that she does for preparation and team leadership and stuff. I think, yeah, I was really impressed. And a lot of people can learn a lot from what she was talking about. I really loved it.
You know, a bit of a fun behind the scenes of that interview is that we did it actually a year ago. Like, we did that interview 1 month after she won the race, but I sat it for almost a year because I thought it would be, instead of pulling it out right after she'd won, I thought it would be more of it would have more impact to release it before the race happened again so that we could really relive, like, to get the hype more hypey before the race this year.
Nah, I think that was a good decision. It was great.
Yeah, thank you so much. I feel like the written piece is maybe one of the pieces that I'm most proud of in my journalistic career at this point. So until the Tour de France Femme.
Well, you asked lots of good questions.
It was really fun. I mean, she's so easy to interview.
Yeah, she's great. And when she's on the podcast, she's also great. I think she did some of the live finishes with us at the Tour de France.
Yeah, last year in 2022.
Yeah.
When she wasn't selected for the team and she was just at home. All right. Well, really quickly, we'll wrap up what happened on Wednesday at Brabant's Appeal. It's one of those really cool races that's in between. There are cobbles, but it's more of a climby race. And so the teams brought a lot of the teams brought in their Ardennes teams to open the legs up before Amstel Gold Race on Sunday. And it really was the favorites that we will expect on Sunday who were at the head of the race. And that's Demi Vollering and Elise Longaborghini, who have started to form this just really lovely rivalry that we haven't really had since Annemiek van Vleuten and Anna van der Breggen. So pretty cool, actually, that we've got a rivalry again at the top of the race for the climbers. But in the end, it was Elise Longaborghini who broke away solo to win the race. And Vollering was really respectful. Well, that's not the right word, was really gracious at the finish, who she said, yep, Elisa just had the stronger legs on the day. And Elisa's post-race interview was awesome. She was like, yeah, today I was stronger, tomorrow she'll probably beat me. And this is where I have a bone to pick, because I've been called out on the Discord for cursing Voss for putting her on my fantasy team. I think Voss cursed herself for winning Dwarves.
No, there's no curse. Let's not speak of curses.
There's no curse.
There's no curse.
We pick a Peggy all the time. Jeez.
Yeah.
That's true.
No, there's no curse. Fans of the Discord, do not speak of that. Otherwise, you're going to jinx my rider.
So, yeah.
Actually, one of my most annoying questions I hate getting is like, what superstitions did you have as a rider? I'm like, why is it people so obsessed with this?
It is a thing, though, right? With some riders I've met, actually a few Italian riders, but... Yeah, I never had superstitions.
I always wear the same socks.
Yeah, it's very pervasive in sport, and even more for fans, I think, than for athletes. I don't know. Anyway, I digress.
No, I mean, it's within the conversation because we're talking about curses. But yeah, Elisa Longaborghini won. And going into the Ardennes, it was a great insight into the form of the climbers who were coming back after Flanders and coming into the Ardennes Classics. And there's a couple that we still haven't seen, like hopefully Liana Lippert. She's on the provisional start list for AMSO Gold Race, and I really hope that she's racing. So was Cecilia Tripp-Ludwig, but now she's not, when I just checked this morning, Thursday morning. So we'll see. But I think going into Sunday's race, it is going to be riders like Elisa Longaborghini and Vollering that we're looking at. Obviously, Vollering coming in is the defending winner, won all three Ardennes last year, and Little Trek coming in with arguably the strongest team in the race yet again, with Sharon Van Enroy and Ellen Van Dyke and Elisa, all three of them in the race. Oh, we didn't talk about Sarah Roy.
And Guy Riolini and Spreddy. Oh,
yeah, we forgot about her. Well, yeah, bad luck, but also like neutral service, WTF.
Drove past her. Yeah.
So I have two things to talk to about that. I was wondering, I need to look into the rules of neutral service. Like, do they at some point in a race go, we can only service so many riders because we only have so much equipment, so we're not going to service riders outside of the first two groups or something? So that's one thing for us or potentially fans on Discord to go double check on the rules of neutral service. And another thing a friend of mine brought up with me only yesterday, Paolo Manaspa, who's a big cycling fan. I'm sure some people might remember.
Yeah.
A big one behind the scenes in sports science in Australia. He said, I noticed that she was on the left-hand side of the road.
Yeah.
And they might not want to stop on the left. You have to service on the right because it's too dangerous.
That's a rule, actually.
It's a good thing to pick up. Yeah, it is a rule.
That is a rule.
Boom. There you go.
You can't service on the left.
He solved it.
I mean, it doesn't take away from how much it sucks. And I think she was in the second group at that point, or the first group. I can't remember if it had broken apart yet.
Yeah,
she was very much still like in the race when it happened. But like just a bummer for her, you know, going into these races as at the point that she is in her career and from what we know about the last year and a bit of her career and how she is as a rider. Like this is a great race for her. So it is a bummer.
Bit shit. But I would like to know from neutral service, like how they make decisions, if it's rule based or if it's just like classic Euro subjective choices that they're making out there. Yeah. So be interesting if anyone has any insights on that.
Cofidis is a French team though. So the neutral service is probably French.
Yeah.
All right. Well, returning to AMSO Gold Race coming up. So It's a hilly, one of the hilly classics. They changed the finish this year, so there's a different diversion before the final run into the Kauberg that is, in theory, going to make it more selective, which we'll see. Potentially, that means that we'll see another win like Kashani Wadoma's win in 2019, I think that was.
19.
When she went away with, was she with Elisa Longaborghini, or I can't, or was that the next year when they were off the front together and Elisa wasn't working and they just basically stalled?
Oh, that's right.
Lost one.
Yes.
But yeah, Kasia going in after a phenomenal Flanders, second at Flanders. So she's another favorite, and she didn't race Brabant's Appeal. So going into AMSO Gold, she's one to watch. We got Ashley Momopasio coming back after a large block at altitude. It's going to be a great race. It's going to be a really good race.
Yeah, and she'll have some good support as well from the Belgian rider Justine Herreke and Sarah Gigante, listener of the podcast.
What a great move.
She was
from her.
Really good on Wednesday. Yeah, she was right there in the pointy end on a cobbled race.
They kind of let her dangle out there for a while.
But still, it looks like she's got good form. So I'm excited to see what she can do in this race. Gracie, have you raced Amstel before?
Yeah, at least once or twice. It's in my mind, it's kind of the most interesting course of the three in the week. I think, you know, the other two get more hype, but I really love this race, so I'm looking forward to it.
And in terms of like moving up and around, I know some of the roads around that area are quite narrow because they're farm roads, but is it a bit easier or harder than like Liège, Bastogne-Liège and Flèche-Wallonne?
Trying to remember.
I think it's
pretty similar. Like, yeah, a bit easier. That it's in the it's shouldn't say this. It's in the nicer area, so nicer roads.
Yeah.
There's also like looking just at the provisional star list, which is pretty for the most part pretty useless. But Pfeiffer Georgie did say after Paris-Roubaix, this is her last race of the spring before she takes a little break. So she's coming in with really good form. As well, in theory, Anna Henderson is on the start list. So, like, all fingers crossed that that's right. Because I just really would like to see her back in the peloton. So are Vollering and Capecchi. So that will be the dynamic of those two, which we saw at Flanders. How they're working together now, especially, you know, with Vollering leaving the team and also knowing so early in the season that Vollering's leaving the team, which is just bizarre. Just feels really weird. The start list is stacked. We're going to have a lot of riders that could win this. And we've seen this race play out with like a solo winner on the final climb. We've seen reduced bunch sprint. Voss won this race once. So it's wide open, but the favorites list is, like, I think pretty set in stone, the way that racing has been going this year. Very few, like, huge surprise wins other than maybe Flanders. But in hindsight, maybe not.
I think Voss's last race as well, maybe, for the spring? I don't know if she'll line up. Yeah, so she'll be pretty motivated. She's won on the Kauberg before, as we know. And maybe she'll do a turnaround like Capecchi.
Oh, so for my fantasy team, I hope so. I'm at least not last anymore. Tills is still, she's holding down the bottom of it, but I can still see the bottom. It's right there.
But Abby, we're approaching tour season now, so the times will change.
Well, she has Vollering as her like anchor. Her anchor is Vollering, and Vollering is coming into her time to shine. So I very much foresee taking over the bottom spot again pretty soon.
I'll be following suit. Although I have Longaborghini, so I'll be hovering around the mid range. I think.
What a season she's having. Just like
both Italians and Balsamo. Wow.
And they're both just awesome people. Anyway, let's wrap this up. what are you guys obsessed with?
Oh, so I feel like I'm in the same position as last week. I'm just doing a lot of the same stuff at the moment, but really enjoying it. I'm like in a happy spot at the moment, so I'm trying to just like go with that and not get too overwhelmed or weighed down by anything. I'm having a little baby moon at the moment. So you're hearing me from the beautiful shores of Byron Bay. So I think I'm going to be a little bit obsessed with just where I am this weekend and really making the most of that. Maybe do some yoga, go to the beach. I've got a decent sized baby bump now. So it's kind of fun looking super pregnant, even though it's getting a bit, physically different, but it's good. So
I love that picture of the then and now from Flanders.
Yeah.
Okay. What am I obsessed with? I don't know if it's an obsession as such. I guess so. Well, maybe I need to put it out into the universe finally. If anyone follows me, I return to social media. On Instagram, I have spoken about it. I've been Swifting quite a bit because I decided to set myself what will be an ambitious goal for me based on the fact I haven't raced in like a very, very, very long time. And also my fitness level, it's demoralizing when I look at the numbers I put out, but it's all perspective. I'm never going to get to the level I was. I'm pretty content with that. But I would like to qualify for the Gravel World Championships in Belgium in October, not the elite category. There's no way in hell I'll qualify for that. Although apparently you can just enter, you just ask your nation if you can get a spot. In Australia, might give a spot, but I'm not doing that. That would just be embarrassing. That said, my age group is still pretty competitive, so I'm going to try and qualify for the Gravel Worlds, which means I'm starting to get a little bit serious about training again, which is weird. And I did like my first proper training block this week. Of like a threshold session, a sweet spot session, and a VO2 max session. And my God, I was saying to my husband, I don't know how I did this before. And like, just so much more training and so much harder. And Abby, you know how you're saying you love 40-20s?
Love 40-20s.
Like I used to do 10, like three sets of 40-20s 10 times. And I think I did a session of like three sets of 4 40-20s and I was dead afterwards. Dead. And like the watts were so embarrassingly low, but that's okay. It's a starting point. So yeah, that's kind of my obsession at the moment. I'm trying to like structure a little bit of training and stuff. And I actually have to get a bike because I do not have a gravel bike. So that's a goal too for the next weeks to try and figure out.
Yeah, shout out to any bike brands listening.
Yeah.
I love this for you. I'm so excited. It's so fun to have a goal. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, even awesome. If I don't reach it, like Hannes was saying, he's like, who cares if you don't reach it this year? Then you go for it next year. Just keep doing it. He's the best husband. I love him. Really good.
No, that's super exciting. I hope that I can be on the sidelines cheering you on.
Yes, we did plan that.
I floated the idea to my husband that perhaps he should race Gravel Worlds this year.
Well, a lot of pros did. They carried the form from Worlds and then came and had a bit of fun. So maybe you guys could do
that.
I
can't remember what the schedule is if it, because Worlds was so early last year.
Worlds is around the 22nd again of September. Okay.
But yeah, that would be so fun to see you.
There you go.
See you race. It'd be really cool. Oh,
let's see. Let's see if I can do it. That's the big goal.
That'd be so cool.
It's in the universe now. I put it out there. And Abby, you never spoke about how the wedding
was.
So
fun.
I don't know if that was your obsession.
It was really cool. It wasn't going to be my obsession, but it was really awesome. I mean, it's so rare to get to see like your buddies from college. And so being able to kind of see those friends and spend 4 days straight with friends that I never ever get to see was really cool. And it's always funny how when you hang out with those people, you kind of like revert back to your former self and not having a baby around. I was like insanely jet lagged. I almost fell asleep at the rehearsal table dinner. I was so jet lagged the whole trip and then turned around and came back to Europe and now I'm jet lagged again. but it was such a cool experience. We weren't at the beach, so we didn't get to, we were landlocked in the middle of Mexico, But there was tons of cool mountains around. So we went on some really fun hikes and hung out at the rooftop pool and drank margaritas. And I've now come to the decision that Mexican food is my favorite food on planet Earth. If I only ate tacos for the rest of my life, I would be happy. But my obsession was going to be that I got a new tattoo yesterday.
Oh, what? Ooh. Was this planned or spontaneous? Oh, wow. A book with a sword and a moon.
My friend, one of my old teammates, actually, who became quite one of the few teammates that I still talk to daily, Jillian Elsey. She's a director for Siniska, and she's living with us for the season while she's DSing in Europe. Her and I got friendship tattoos yesterday.
Oh, and I love that. Like Carly and I.
Yeah, it's we both really, really love to read, and we have a book club that we read, which we have to discuss our book, by the way, at some point. But
I finished it.
Yeah, I finished it too. I've been meaning to write a message.
We
got to
talk about it.
Guys.
We got
to
talk about it at some point. But we love fantasy, Jillian and I. So yeah, we got a book for the listeners. It's a book, but the pages are like, it's an open book, but the pages are mountains, and then there's a sword going through it with some stars and a moon.
You should put a photo
love
up.
It. Yeah,
I can totally do that. It turned out really cool, and I haven't had a tattoo in 3 years. So,
oh wow, that's big.
A long time for someone that has a lot of tattoos.
Well, you can't get tattoos when you're pregnant or breastfeeding, and then I just didn't have time because it's quite a time consuming activity. So, but now I'm like, now I've got the itch, and the girl that did the tattoo was amazing. And so now I'm like, oh.
Where did you get it done?
This really cool studio in Girona that's called Wild Garden Studio. And it's all women. Mm-hmm. And they all do like fine line or watercolor tattoos. So they're all like super arty. Wow. And their Instagram page is, I have to try not to look at it because then I'm like, oh my God, I could do flowers here. I could do a cowboy boot here. And I mean, they're just so, so, so talented. It's really cool. And so, yeah. The itch is scratched, and now the cut is wide open. And I'm like, oh God, when's the next one? And Tom's like, oh no. But it's cool.
My sister's a tattoo artist. She could come and give us wheel talk
oh,
ones.
That'd be so fun.
That is great. Could we do that? Would Taylor get a tattoo?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, we'll talk. That's for different chat.
We'll
different
get our friends far away tattoos when we all come to Australia. Yeah. How's that?
You know what I was thinking actually, and why I'm surprised you haven't done this. Why haven't you made us friendship bracelets?
I may or may not have made you friendship bracelets, but it's not super easy to get them all over the world, and I forgot them in Pandora, so I didn't give you yours when you were here.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm really excited about that. I want a friendship bracelet. I haven't had one since I was about 8 or 9.
I have friendship bracelets I've already made. I'll get them to you somehow.
I've got a friendship tattoo, as mentioned, that Carly, she was so sad. So I went first and got the tattoo, right? And then when she saw what it actually turned out and looked like, she cried a bit, apparently. No. She was like... She really didn't want it on her foot, but she got it anyway because she loved me that much.
Jillian made me go first because she was afraid.
Yeah. Yours is beautiful. I still like mine, and it's got a fun story.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
Thanks, you guys, for chatting with me, and apologies to the listeners for the late episode. We figured that the Saturday episode tied you over a couple extra days before we dropped into your feeds, but we'll be back next week, normal time on Tuesday with an episode about Amstel Gold Race and looking ahead to Flesh Wallonne and Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Thanks, everyone, for listening.